This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. Thanks to everyone in Richmond who came out to the big show, History, Liberty, and Laughs. Great to see all of you there. It's such passionate people. And, of course, there's a big election in Virginia. You guys never get a break. You got a governor, lieutenant governor, DA, AG, rather. And so it was fun to see everyone right in the thick of things. Mark Wayne Mullen's coming up in 35 minutes. Lawrence Jones is here standing by. A lot going on today. The House Judiciary and Oversight Committee is going to look at violent crime in America. The president greets Bibi Netanyahu in a couple of hours, and he's going to also have a big meeting with other legislative leaders to avoid a shutdown. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
The president will be speaking to our friends in Qatar who have served as incredible intermediaries between the United States and Hamas, and we've had some direct talks with them as well. This is why we've drafted a 21-point, incredibly detailed plan that we know can be and must be agreeable to both sides.
Is a deal on Gaza about to get done? Could hostages be about to get out? We're likely to learn more today, and Lawrence and I will go after it as Bibi sits down at the White House.
Number two.
This campaign was for the underserved, the marginalized, the abandoned, and betrayed by government. Since then, it has been my honor to be your mayor.
But he is out. Mayor Adams gives up his reelection bid, which was anemic at best. What does it mean for the race in general? What does it mean for Cuomo, for Sliwa, and the frontrunner Zohran Mamdani? We'll talk about it.
Number one.
A shutdown looks likely at this point, based on my conversation this morning with President Trump. He says both sides are at a stalemate. Quote, I just don't know how we are going to solve this issue. That makes a shutdown quite likely.
Shutdown countdown. Hail Mary meeting today in the Oval Office as leaders convene to avoid a Tuesday night shutdown. The stakes, the deal, and why the Dems are simply overplaying their weekend. Lawrence, I think Caroline Leavitt made it clear Senator Thune, hardly a firebrand, the most level-headed guy, I'd say, in Washington, said, I'm just asking you to continue funding at the Biden levels. This is not even Trump's budget.
The problem is Schumer got hit hard the last deal. Anybody in his position would have made that deal, but it got hit hard by the socialist wing of the party. They didn't feel like he put up a fight. And so now he's being unreasonable because he has a reelection to worry about. AOC has the energy of the base, and so he doesn't want to give an inch. The problem is it's going to make the Democrats look awful. They're not even advocating for American citizens right now. A lot of what they're advocating for is the corporate interests when it comes to NPR, as well as health care for the illegals in this country.
All right, so you have your own, and I have my own ways of finding out what's going on in the White House. Yep. They're very kind to us. Robert Costa was all excited. He was on Face the Nation. He talked to the president yesterday. He's the CBS chief Washington analyst. Here's what he said. Cut one.
A shutdown looks likely at this point, based on my conversation this morning with President Trump. He says both sides are at a stalemate. Democrats want to extend health care subsidies that were part of the Affordable Care Act. But President Trump said his focus on health care is on preventing undocumented migrants from having access to any of the U.S. health care system. Now, it's illegal for any non-citizen to have that sort of access. But President Trump says we're not going to have it, quote, we're not going to allow it in terms of moving forward on any discussion unless the Democrats come to his side on health care and don't focus on the subsidies.
But based on his conversation, he says the president's not going to do anything. What he's going to say is those subsidies that they're worried about, they were inflated by the pandemic and never reined in. There's so much abuse there. I'll play some sound bites later in the hour. But here's what he's saying, saying that they're not up until December anyway. So what are you worried about in September?
This is, again, like I said, this is all a fight that Schumer is picking right now to get the support. But now, I'll tell you this, Brian, another angle that they haven't considered because we haven't talked about DOGE in a long time, but they're still active. You really want to shut the government down so that DOGE can start firing people right now? Because that gives them special powers then. The government shut down, they can decide who goes and doesn't shut. Who goes and who stays. I don't think the Democrats want that.
I don't either. I want to talk about what's going on in the New York mayor's race. Yesterday, it was Eric Adams saying, I got 9% in the last poll. I'm not going to win. He couldn't get the matching funds on this campaign.
Committee in New York, he says that we're going after him unfairly.
Right. Well, they said he pocketed $100,000 or things to that nature. He hired terrible people, but True. He was so much better than de Blasio. So here's what Andrew Cuomo said when he heard about Eric Adams, who, when Adams left, did not endorse anybody. Cut 15.
I have not spoken to the mayor today. I would love to speak to him whenever he deems appropriate. It's not just about the polling. You know, the mayor is the incumbent mayor. So he is a potent force in the campaign. If he is not actively campaigning, that changes the entire dynamic of the race.
How?
Well, because there's now more attention on just me and just Mr. Mamdani. It is a two-person race. And when you compare me to Mr. Mamdani, that is apples and oranges.
And Curtis Lee would too, but your thoughts?
Well, Brian, I have to be honest. I've been surprised about the development of this race. Not the Mamdani aspect of this, but the fact that Adams' poll numbers were so low, considering he's brought crime down in the city. You've seen a real impact. I'm not saying it's perfect, but he's a hell of a lot better than Cuomo. I think his polling numbers were abysmal to begin with. I'm not sure this impacts the race that much with Sliwa saying he's going to stay in.
So just so you know, people go, well, the mayor's going to be reined in by a governor that's more moderate and a president. This mayor, if Mamdani wins, can do a lot of damage. You talk about defunding the police that 74% of New York City dwellers don't want, 56% strongly don't want. He's going to do it. Charter schools, which give minorities the best chance possible of getting out of their current economic situation, he's going to limit that as much as possible. He is going to cut back on cops. He's going to be quickly siding. He's going to be against ICE, just like the mayor of Chicago is. Don't let anybody tell you that being mayor of New York is not a big deal. It'll really help ruin our lives.
And just to build on that, Brian, everyone has keep talking about, you know, even the governor has pointed this out, and Adams did as well, that he doesn't have the authority when it comes to the business community to raise the taxes and all that. But he can make life a living hell for him. Regulations, the taxing, when it comes to the inspections and approval of permits, that will make it very uncomfortable for a business to be there. So although he may not put a tax per se on there, the additional funding that is going to take them to get a business and be able to operate in this city, that's a pain.
Right. The Wall Street Journal has no sympathy for Adams. He says Adams should have dropped out much sooner. Went on to say that if he abandoned his campaign for reelection, and the shame is he didn't do it sooner, he'd have given a better chance of defeating Mamdani. His best decision was appointing Jessica Tisch. He goes on to say, she has attempted to restore broken windows policy. She's having success. Had Adams dropped out in the winter, Tisch might have had a chance to run as an independent.
Yeah, I don't know where they've gotten that from, the Journal. But I also don't think that it's fair to just say Tisch alone when it comes to the policing in this city. The mayor sets the tone for the policing in this city. If you don't have a mayor that's going to back you up when you put the tough cops on the street, then that's nothing. So, I mean, to just single-handedly say is Tisch, doing that has brought the climate down when it comes to that, I just think that's a miss on
their
part.
There was a word about a month ago that Mamdani was going to make people feel better by hiring Bill Bratton, who did a good job in New York. Did a really good job in Los Angeles. Came back with de Blasio. So Bill Bratton come back and save him? I hope not.
Because
he's not going to be able to do anything that he wants to do. It'll embarrass his reputation.
Let me tell you something. Everything that Mamdani stands for when it comes to policing, Bratton is against.
Right.
So that would never work. It would never work having a socialist who wants to defund. I'm sorry. He changed it. He says that he doesn't want to defund anymore. Apparently, he got enlightened after a cop was assassinated. But he still wants to get rid of the unit, the Special Operations Group. So you're going to have a bunch of therapists showing up with a guy that has a gun or a knife to a woman's throat. That's not smart.
I want to come back and talk to you a bit more, especially about the killer of Charlie Kirk. But I want to bring you to the 1977 cop killer, Assata Shakur, who escaped his country and went to Cuba and died over the weekend. And there was great tributes put out by the Chicago mayor. Great tributes put out by the Socialist Party that elected, that propelled and backed, and that Zohran Mamdani is a member of. Rest in peace, rest in power. The American state brutally oppressed Assata and her Black Panther Party. And he goes on, Mamdani won't answer the question, do you support your party that actually salutes this woman who killed a cop? Won't answer the question. You know who else won't? Mikey Sherrill, who wants to be the next governor of New Jersey.
So just so we're clear, it's not just a cop killer. She's on the most wanted list for the FBI.
Do you know who put him on that list? Do you know who put her on that list?
Who?
Barack Obama.
Okay, so there you go. All right. So there used to be certain things that we could all agree on, which is you don't celebrate cop killers, both parties. But the left, they become so deranged. That's why people keep criticizing the president when he says the radical left are lunatics. But you can really see it. They're not normal Democrats. They're not the Fettermans of the world. They're not the Harold Ford Juniors of the world. They're crazy. Joe Manchin.
All right. When we come back, I want to talk about what's going to be happening today as well. And that is the killer of Charlie Kirk going to be on come out again to be read additional charges. And they could be federal charges. And we'll see what's next and find out what Lawrence thinks with all his connections could be happening with other people being charged in the assassination. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a three-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
It's not been finalized yet, but we're working with President Trump's team, actually as we speak, and I hope we can make it a go, because we want to free our hostages, we want to get rid of Hamas rule, and have them disarmed, Gaza demilitarized, and a new future set up for Gazans and Israelis alike, and for the whole region.
Your thoughts, Lawrence? I mean, we keep hearing that this is comprehensive and people are optimistic. I feel so. Even Caroline Leavitt today with us on Fox and Friends was optimistic.
Brian, I feel like you and I, we've traded roles. I was more optimistic when it comes to Russia-Ukraine agreement happening. Yeah. And you're more optimistic when it comes to this. I'm not optimistic at all.
But 21 points, it shows very specific.
Yeah, I mean, you have the president and Netanyahu have a great relationship, so they're never going to let the world see that there's daylight between them. But the problem is there still hasn't been a cohesive message to say, how do you destroy Hamas? Israel knows how to destroy Hamas, but the PR battle that they have to go against, which the president is trying to cut a deal with the Muslim world, try to get these peace agreements. And so if they go after them like they want to do it, that's going to mess up that peace deal. So that's why I'm not optimistic, Brian.
So evidently Hamas announced, I read the Jerusalem Post today, that they've lost two of the contact with the group holding two of the hostages after the last hit in Gaza City. The IDF is hitting pretty hard there. So they lost two. That could be the trip up these negotiations. Also, in talking to some of the negotiators, they have a hard time. Hamas has been so decimated. They have a hard time finding guys in Gaza to talk to that speaks for, because they've killed so many of the higher-ups.
And the communication system. They've destroyed their community. They're freaked out. They're panicked. Pagers, cell phones have all gone off on them. And so they're trying to use this old-school technology now to communicate amongst each other.
A string in a cup?
maybe tapping the tunnels back and forth. Brian, I want to be hopeful with this, but at the end of the day, I think, and the president has said this as well, Hamas knows once they release all the hostages, it's over for them. It's done. I'm not going to pretend like it's not going to be over for them. Once they release the hostages, that doesn't mean that the mission is over.
Right.
They still have to destroy the terrorists. So again, they realize that's their only leverage. Right.
One of the things was don't hit in Qatar again. I'm sure the Israel.
Okay, then don't go.
Yeah.
Don't bring your terrorists to the country then.
They've also met with two different clans. And they said, look, we will give you aid. We will help you with intelligence to fight off Hamas. We want you to be the next guys in charge. So they've identified two clans they could possibly work with because they do not want to work with the Palestinian Authority.
We don't need your help. And when I say we, because America is keenly connected with the Jewish state, with their intelligence network. The Mossad doesn't need any help from these cells.
The IDF is connected with these clans in order to have somebody on the Palestinian side represent.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I mean. We don't need, they already got the necessary people within inside of them. You guys have to turn them all over. If you want freedom for your country, you have to make it very clear to the world and them. And I know it could be a suicide mission for you. We don't want you here anymore. They keep polling the people within Gaza. They still want Hamas as their leadership. So something got to give.
Right. But then again, this is what I worry about. This is the optimistic side. Do they know Hamas is in charge? I'm not going to sign my death warrant by answering a poll that could get tracked to me that says I don't want Hamas to lead anymore. Follow me? So I'm just saying that as long as they have the guns, the mob is king in the area. That's why I got to give a portion of my income to the mob and pretend they're not stealing all the aid and then reselling it to me. So lastly, on Tyler Robinson, who's going to be in front and center today, I know he's going to be convicted, death penalty, it's going to take forever, but I'd like to know where the investigation is. And I believe I'm getting some people telling me, but you have better sources, that they're going to go after the boyfriend. And that he's being friendly and open now, but they do not believe that text. They think it was too cute to be perfect, however you say it. They believe that he was in part of that. And does it get bigger on that if you look down the pike on Discord?
So what I'm hearing, and again, this is sourcing, this could change, is that the feds want to go after him. The state want him to continue to be a cooperating witness. So there's some division there. This often happens. The states has a priority and the feds have a priority. The feds are like, he's a part of, he knew it was going to happen. He destroyed evidence and he's only helping
now. You mean
the
trans partner?
Correct. Right. Not that he knew before, but he knew about him. He didn't turn him in and that he destroyed that note. So the feds want to go after him on that. The feds also are the ones that want to go after the entire network of terror cells within the domestic terror cells.
Lawrence, you get it like I get it. I have people, intelligent people, maybe not in the news, that tell me, well, what, is that true that Israel's behind the assassination of Charlie Kirk?
They got to stop it.
I mean, is it true 9/11's an inside job?
Got to stop it.
What is going on?
They got to stop it. I mean, I try to figure out people that I respect, or at least I thought I respected, are saying some of this crazy nonsense. And it's honestly, Brian, it's the growing anti-Semitism in this country, that the Jews are responsible for all. They sit in these basements and they come up with these theories. And I think the people that are online, that some that we once used to respect, they have gotten attached to the monetization of it. So you're making money on it, but they don't realize that there's foreign governments that want this dissent to happen.
Think for a second. Dangerous. That the IDF would take out Charlie Kirk.
No way. He was a friend of Israel.
An American, the ultimate American. He was a friend of Israel, despite what anyone else has been telling you. We know it personally. All right, Lawrence, thanks so much. I'll see you tomorrow between 6 and 9.
That's right.
And I hope your hour of Fox and Friends is the most special.
We'll look at the ratings.
This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. Between two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN, you try to be in control of how your info is protected. But many other places also have it, and they might not be as careful. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats. If your identity is stolen, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast for 40% off. Terms apply.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm not going to get in front of the president and tell you what he will do, but I've talked with him, a couple of times, even yesterday. And I'm telling you where his head is. He wants to bring in the leaders to come in and act like leaders and do the right thing for the American people. It's fine to have partisan debates and squabbles, but you don't hold the people hostage for their services to allow yourself political cover. And that's what Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries are doing right now.
And that is Speaker Johnson yesterday on with Maria, but he did the tour and just let everybody know. We're doing a shutdown. I'm not asking for anything. I just want to continue to fund the government at the Biden rates. This is Joe Biden's budget. The big, beautiful bill is coming in. I get it. And you want to, obviously, if you're a Democrat, you're not happy about it unless your name is John Fetterman. But that has nothing to do with shutting the government down. Bottom line is the Senate did not get their appropriations bills done in time. They didn't go to conference. They don't seem to ever do it. And now they have a situation where they have a continuing resolution. What's going to happen? I sense we're going to shut the government down Tuesday night, even though the president's meeting today with leadership, I think around 3 o'clock. Senator Mark Wayne Mullen of Oklahoma from Armed Services and Appropriations joins us now. Senator, what do you think about what the speaker said, and what do you think about what I said about my prediction?
Yeah. Hey, Brian, thanks for having me on your show. I believe you're probably right. I also spoke with the White House and the president. He wants to keep the government open. I mean, that's what our goal is. And what's happened here is the Senate, we actually have a big chunk of our appropriation bills done, reported to the floor. I mean, we have NDAA right now that's being held up by Chuck Schumer, which has the National Defense Authorization Act. And it's always a bipartisan bill, but Chuck Schumer is refusing to move it forward. He's holding all the appropriation bills hostage, and so we can't move forward. I believe you're probably accurate. We're probably running into a shutdown, and this is why we're going to run into a shutdown. Now, keep in mind, this appropriation bill, or this CR, continuing resolution, is the same appropriation bill they voted for just 6 months ago. Same thing. There's no poison pills. There's no legislation on it. It's called a clean CR. In fact, this is the cleanest CR I've ever seen. But more so than that, keep in mind, 13 times, this same CR in some form has been voted on by the Democrats during Joe Biden's administration. The difference between this CR and the one they voted for 13 times is that it has Trump on the ticket. And so what they're trying to hold the American people, our military, our construction projects, all the federal employees around the country, our national parks, what they're trying to hold hostage for is a $40 billion a tax-funded subsidy for insurance companies. Now, what I mean by that is during COVID, the insurance companies for health insurance came in and said, hey, we can't cover all the cost on this, so we need help with the Affordable Health Care Act. I'm using that instead of Obamacare, so this is people will understand the irony of this, Brian. This is affordable health care. Remember, it's supposed to be affordable for everybody and be profitable for the insurance companies. So during COVID, underneath the lead of Chuck Schumer and Joe Biden, they passed a subsidy called a premium tax, which is basically a 4% tax on premiums that taxpayers paid on top of what the premium insurance holder was paying. Well, that's set to expire. Well, there isn't COVID anymore. We don't need to be paying 4% on top of the premium that the insurance companies are already charging the American people when they're making. And I'm all about capitalism. I'm all about making profit for private companies, but they're making between 15% and 25% margins right now, and yet the Democrats are saying that we still need to be paying this 4% subsidy, which is, as I said, a $40 billion tax bill per year that they want us to pay. It is absurd. That is them holding us hostage. There is no reason why we don't go ahead and pass a 7-week CR, and we're not going to get all 12 appropriation bills done. We probably won't get all 12 appropriation bills done at all, but we can do 6 of them. We definitely can do 5 of them, but we could do 6 of them, and then we'd probably have to CR the rest of them because the obstructionists of the Democrat Party won't allow us to move forward in the Senate.
So, Senator Mullen, so we go in there, and you want to have some type of negotiation, unless they're just going to say, come out, they're going to meet with the president, he wouldn't budge, we wouldn't budge, so we're going to shut down. So I could just see, I know that Speaker Johnson wanted to make sure he was there, and so did Thune. They were kind of against them having this meeting last week. Do you think they're against this meeting today also?
Well, I think that what they realize is it's not going to do any good. We've been negotiating with Democrats for months now. For the last literally for the last 6 weeks, about every week, I've had 15 to 20 members at my house in D.C. in the evening or for breakfast every week, Democrats, Republicans, trying to work through this at leadership level, not Chuck Schumer, Speaker, Hakeem Jeffries, Leader Thune level, but the level right below that, trying to find a path forward. At the same time, Schumer has been refusing, literally, and Hakeem have been refusing to talk to Speaker Johnson and Thune because they want the premium tax. They want the yeah. $40 billion tax bill. So there's not a path forward, but President Trump is the art of the deal. If anybody can bring this thing home, it's him. What we're not seeing, Brian, is a path forward. We don't know. Maybe they'll go in there with a different offer at this point, but we don't know where we can move because when you're talking about a clean CR, why are they against that other than they're trying to just slow roll President Trump's agenda that the American people voted for almost a year ago?
Well, true. This is the one thing I was thinking of, haven't read it anywhere, and although I've had a chance to talk with the president, I didn't bring this up. But, you know, he does rescission packages. You got your first $9 billion back. What if he pledges no rescissions for 6 months?
You know, people have said that, and what they don't want 6 months. They actually want to do away. They've said that too. They want to do away with rescission. And what I'm saying is, no, that's the law. The president of the United States has been able to do rescission packages for decades, and Congress gave them that authority. If we want to take that authority away, then we can have a vote on it, but it's also got to be signed by the president of the United States. The difference is President Trump knows how to use the rescission packages, and the other presidents wasn't able to be effective in doing so. But it is within the president's executive power to be able to do that. So why would the president negotiate to give away his authority when Congress is the one that gave it to us? Once again, if we don't like it, then pass a bill in both chambers and then get enough votes on it to have the president sign it into law, and we can remove the rescission packages for future presidents too, not just this one.
So I want to go over to Ukraine. The president had a dramatic change, and I think he just looked at the reality and is getting some reports on the ground that Ukraine's doing a lot better than people thought, and the Russian economy is a lot weaker than people thought in reality. I mean, it's the size of Belgium on a good day, and all they do is make weapons and lose people. They've lost about 1 million people, I think 250,000 of which are dead. Here's Congressman Mike Turner of Ohio after he came back from Ukraine. Cut 27.
Now, what I saw in Ukraine, which is what's really incredible, is that they are winning modern warfare. What they're doing with their anti-drone technology, I mean, they are really the tech bros of the future. Mm-hmm. They are implementing on the front line anti-drone air defense technology that is winning this war. With our help and assistance, which they're going to continue to need for the long-range systems that Russia's bringing in and that are attacking Kyiv with, but what their anti-drone technology that no one else has, that they are implementing, they are winning this war. We need to be on the side of that war of the future that they're winning and support Ukraine.
So your thoughts on what you're hearing?
Well, I go back all the way to the Budapest Memorandum back in 1994 when we agreed to protect Ukraine specifically from Russian invasion if they were to give up their nuclear weapons. And so Ukraine gave up their nuclear weapons to the United States for our protection. At the same time, we can't be in a fight forever. They have to be able to show that they can win. What they've showed is a tremendous amount of tenacity. In Fort Sill in Lawton, Oklahoma, it's called FIRES, where we train on just what they're having to do in this particular war. Long-range ballistic fights, we're shooting weapons and drones across enemy lines, and then we train that in Fort Sill. We've trained several companies from Ukraine's come to Oklahoma. Every time those boys come in, we learn something from them. It's amazing the way they're able to adapt and move at a rapid speed. And so they can be in this fight. They can win this war. But we have been somewhat handcuffing them by not allowing them to use the weapons to their full potential, like limiting the range of how far they can shoot into Russia. At the same time, we saw what happened over the weekend where Russia for 12 hours bombed Kyiv. Well, just the Tomahawk missiles alone have a range of almost 1,200 miles,
yes.
But it's only 500 miles into Moscow. If President Trump were to allow them to just start taking the fight farther inland, then I think the war could change. But at
have
the
you
same
told
time,
him that,
there's
Senator?
A lot more bodies.
Have you told him that, Senator?
We have had conversations about this. The issue is President Trump has always been trying to end the war, and he said this multiple times. President Trump has said from the beginning he's going to end that war. He wants to end all killing. But now he's also admitting that the war he thought would be the easiest to end has been the hardest to end because Russia doesn't want to end the war. It is actually good for their economy. Believe it or not, even though their economy is in the tank, remember, it was already in the tank. The ruble was it was junk status before they invaded Ukraine again. And I mean again because they did it in 14 when they took my mind just slipped me. When they went in 2014 with Obama and
took Crimea.
Crimea.
And took part of the Donbass.
Brian. Yes. And so now that the economy is actually somewhat thriving because the industrials have to stand up, we have India and China that's offsetting them by buying their crude oil at 76 cents on the dollar, which we need to – that's why we need to put sanctions on them. President Trump is starting to change the idea. So Lindsey Graham and myself have had multiple conversations with the president on what could be done, but he doesn't want to extend the war. So what he's trying to do is figure out a way to get them to negotiate. And if he feels like that allowing Ukraine to go farther in into Russia, take the fight to Moscow, if he feels like that is an opportunity to come to a peace deal, then I believe that's what he's going to do. But his ultimate goal is to end the war.
Right. And the thing is, he knows when he breaks off talks, the war is going to go for another 2 years. But now he's realizing that Vladimir Putin did him a favor. He eliminated the gray area. He gave no hope that this guy wants to talk. And he made
That's
the president
exactly
look
right.
bad after Alaska and then refused the trilateral afterwards. And Zelensky has held the line. And he said, not only will I pay for your weapons through NATO or what we can, I'm going to help you with the drone technology because we are now leading the world. Understand, over the weekend, check this out. NATO had a meeting in Moscow. They had Britain, France, Germany envoys meet with Moscow, and they took notes. They said, basically, if you keep doing this, we're going to start shooting down your jets. You keep going into our airspace. Germany's already committed to $90 billion this coming up a year to procure more weapons to build up their arsenal, which really they've had none. And their chancellor said that they are now for taking all the frozen Russian assets and distributing it to Ukraine. So we have, through the president being tough love, has totally awoken, along with Vladimir Putin's obstinance, NATO to the challenge. And it looks like we're rising to the challenge. Am I being overly optimistic?
No, you're being absolutely correct. We have always said the fight is in Europe. This isn't our fight. This is our fight to support our friends and allies in Europe. But if they should be leading the charge. What has happened is United States and Biden was leading the charge, which is asinine. We shouldn't be doing that. Now what President Trump says, no, we will support you, but you've got to lead the fight. This is in your backyard. You guys have been through this during World War I, even though it was Germany, and World War II when it was Germany. Now it's Russia being aggressive. You guys seen this before. You guys know what you're facing. It's time for you guys to take the lead, and we'll support you with the greatest technology because that's what the United States produces. We produce the greatest technology. We'll share it with you, but you're going to buy it. We're not going to fund this war for you. And what has taken place is the other leaders have said, okay, we see this because if we don't stop it now, we've seen the writing on the wall twice before. If we don't stop it in Ukraine, we're all going to be drawn into this. And so they're all getting into the fight, which is exactly what needed to happen, which is why you have to have a leader like President Trump that leads from the front, draws a clear vision of what he expects you to do, and then he follows through with his word once you follow through with yours.
You know, the president on Friday came out and said, we're going to get peace in Gaza. I actually was able to communicate with him this morning. He says, Bibi's on board, 21-point plan. I think they might have a big announcement today. Do you want to help our audience to know what you hear?
We're expecting an announcement today, but it's still an active war, so anything can change. Brian, I appreciate the opportunity, but I'll never get ahead of the president on this announcement. And the simple fact is because nothing's for a fact until it happens. Things can happen 2 minutes, 30 seconds before they take the podium and make the announcement. So we'll see it right out. And it's an announcement. I shouldn't say it's earth-changing. but it's definitely moving in the right direction.
Right. It's up to Hamas to sign off on it. Just make it clear who's not signing off on it. Let everybody know.
Hamas could end the war tomorrow. They could end the suffering. They could end the war tomorrow if they just simply lay down their weapons and walked away. Hamas has made it very clear they're never going to stop fighting. They're always going to fight. And if they have an opportunity to regroup, they're going to do the same thing they did to start the war. And so the only way to eliminate crazy is you have to eliminate it completely, because there's no negotiating with crazy. My mom always told me you can't argue with crazy. Well, that's what you're doing with terrorist organizations like Hamas that are just mindset isn't the rational thinking like most human beings.
The one guy I know who's going to get the best seat in the House when the UFC comes to the White House is Senator Mark Wayne Mullen. And don't be surprised if he tries to put himself on the card. We'll see.
A little old for that.
Well, I don't know about that. You're looking pretty strong. Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, thanks so much.
Thanks, brother. See you.
Back in a moment.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Who do you blame for the division?
I do believe that social media is a cancer, and it is taking all of our worst impulses and putting them on steroids. It is driving us to division. It is driving us to hate. I'm not asking anybody to hold hands and hug it out. I'm not asking for that. I'm trying to get people to stop shooting each other.
That is the governor of Utah sitting down 60 Minutes because he was so good, and this is consistent with who he is. It was so good, Spencer Cox. He was so good in when he was running for office and got four more years. He did not vote for Trump in 2016 and 2020. He did vote for him in 2024. He was asked by the White House to do all the Sunday shows after the Charlie Kirk shooting, so they don't resent him, but he does want to reach across the aisle. He does want to talk what Charlie Kirk did with others, but he's strongly pro-life. He's strongly fiscally responsible. They're traditional conservative, but open to other schools of thought. And he's wondering, can that be the new trend in America? And the one thing that was brought up, and I'll put it out to you, and you could write me and get on BrianKilmeade.com. Could a guy like Spencer Cox, if he was somebody that hit on your beliefs, the fact that he wants to reach across an aisle, do you think you would not speak to him or not vote for him or a woman like this in the primary? If someone talked about reaching across the aisle if they get the nomination, Would that be a no-go zone for you? For Democrats, too, especially. I mean, if they come out and talked about, I mean, you had Beto O'Rourke thought it would be good for him to say, well, take down whatever wall was built. Remember, we're going to give citizenship to every illegal. I'm sure not everybody agreed with that. Joe Biden never agreed with that, but he did when he was in the primary. Could a guy like Spencer Cox, who says he doesn't want to run for president, ever win a primary? Brian Kilmeade Show.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. I hope you had a fantastic weekend. If you think this is going to be a slow week, you have not been paying attention. A lot going on today. The president's going to have a meeting with leadership to avoid a shutdown. Also, he's going to be meeting with Bibi Netanyahu shortly about a Middle East peace plan, and there's a lot of stuff in between. This hour, I'm going to be joined by Congressman Dan Muser of Pennsylvania. He's going to be in studio, and Mark Halpern is standing by, editor-in-chief of Two Way. So let's get to the big three, then to Mark.
Number three.
The president will be speaking to our friends in Qatar who have served as incredible intermediaries between the United States and Hamas, and we've had some direct talks with them as well. This is why we've drafted a 21-point, incredibly detailed plan that we know can be and must be agreeable to both sides.
And that is Caroline Leavitt on with us on Fox and Friends today. Is a deal on Gaza about to get done? Could hostages be actually ready to get out? We're likely to learn more this afternoon, and then the ball will be in Hamas's court.
Number two.
This campaign was for the underserved, the marginalized, the abandoned, and betrayed by government. Since then, it has been my honor to be your mayor.
He is out. Mayor Adams gives up his reelection bid, which was anemic at best. What does it mean for the rest of the field? And why did he not endorse somebody in the way out while saying, look out for radical candidates? Cuomo and Sliwa are left. We'll talk about what it means for the race with Mark.
Number one.
A shutdown looks likely at this point, based on my conversation this morning with President Trump. He says both sides are at a stalemate. Quote, I just don't know how we are going to solve this issue. That makes a shutdown quite likely.
Yep. Robert Costa talked to the president and he relayed that message on CBS Face the Nation. Shutdown countdown. Hail Mary meeting today in the Oval Office as leaders convene to avoid it. The stakes and the deal and why the Dems are simply, in my view, overplaying their hand. And they'll say they're not in power, but we all know it needs 60 votes to get a continuing resolution or any type of agreement. So let's bring in Mark Halperin, editor-in-chief of Two-Way. Mark, always great to see you. Most everybody I've been talking to, reading about, says it looks like we're heading towards a shutdown. Is that what your sources say?
I mean, almost definitely. They could reach some accord today. I'd say probably a 10% chance. But both parties, I think, are unafraid of the shutdown. And unlike some of these shutdowns in the past where one side seemed to have the upper hand, even independent handicappers, I don't think, can tell you for sure who would win the politics of a shutdown. So whether it will last 2 days, 2 weeks, or 2 months, I think it's too soon to say, but I think we will have one of those classic countdown clocks that go past the deadline.
Why do you think that Senator Thune and Speaker Johnson discouraged the president from having that meeting last week?
From the people I talked to, they did not like the Democrats' posture. They think it's unrealistic, and they thought a meeting where one side had demands that were never going to be achieved was just not only not a good use of the president's time, but, you know, they're talking about health care, and that's an issue where Democrats traditionally do well. So to have a meeting where the Democrats could come out and say the Republicans were unreasonable on health care, I think they thought was just not in their political interest to do.
So now we know the subsidies are not going to evaporate until November, December. So saying that they're going to go away if we have this continuing resolution is just wrong. And this is the Biden budget, right? The big, beautiful bill has not kicked in yet. This isn't the Trump budget. So you're asking to continue spending at the rate that Joe Biden wanted you to. But Chuck Schumer caved last time, or he was perceived to be caving. And we just knew he's not going to be, for his own sake, wouldn't want to be perceived caving again, right?
Yeah, you cannot be a leader in the Democratic Party today if you have a posture towards Donald Trump that's anything but fight, fight, fight. See that with Gavin Newsom. And now Chuck Schumer cannot be seen as separating himself from the Democratic Party to urge compromise. At the same time, as you suggested, they've got some time here to work out this healthcare thing. So for those interested in the process, Brian, I think the most likely outcome is a short-term continuing resolution, keep the government open at Biden levels, which a lot of conservatives, I think, probably will think is not great. And then a separate deal down the road on these healthcare subsidies for at least some of the people benefiting from the Affordable Care Act.
This was the story last night, yesterday afternoon, Mayor Eric Adams, cut 9.
When I was elected to serve as your mayor, I said these words. This campaign was never about me. It was about the people of this city, from every neighborhood and background, who had been left behind and believed they would never catch up. This campaign was for the underserved, the marginalized, the abandoned, and betrayed.
So he's out. You can't get into double digits at this point, you're out. The Wall Street Journal says you should have got out earlier. This is not going to help. The president feels the same way, that I'm not going to give Eric Adams a deal or a job. Can't get confirmed anyway. I'm not going to do that because Sliwa was going to stay in, and I don't think Cuomo's got a chance. What do your sources tell you is the reality on the ground? Is Mamdani inevitable?
He's inevitable today, but things can change. First of all, we need to see what kind of negative ads run against him. Second, there are two debates coming up. And I think if the moderators, unlike in the primary debates, if the moderators ask Mamdani to think about things like policing, about legalizing sex trade, about some of his more liberal policies, if that's the way they focus the debates rather than the primary debates, which focused a lot on Andrew Cuomo, then I think you could see a changed dynamic. And Sliwa doesn't have to get out of the race. He's the Republican on the ballot. As long as people don't see him as a factor. The paradox, though, is the more Donald Trump or Chuck Schumer or Hakeem Jeffries, the more the establishment of both parties makes it clear they favor Cuomo or they don't like Mondami, that may help him. That riles up the base. That rallies up the anti-establishment part of the Democratic Party. So, like I said, today, Mondami is a lock to win, but we got over a month to go, and I suspect the debates could be pretty important.
So that's interesting. Do you think Cuomo, I don't even remember, does Cuomo have a reputation of being a good debater?
Historically, okay. But in the primary debates against Mondami, I think part of the reason he lost was he was horrible. I think he would be wise to prepare, but also he's got to hope, whether he works the refs in advance or not, he has to hope the moderators focus on the front runner. Mondami has been facing, and this is a kind of an under-the-radar thing, he's faced some tougher questioning over the last couple of weeks, and he's not done well. He's not been able to really answer some of these tougher questions. Most debates focus on the front runner, right? So if a lot of people in New York have never heard Mondami speak, they haven't focused on the race. The turnout in the primary was higher than normal, but it's still not a big percentage of the electorate. So I continue to tell people, if the debates focus on the front runner, if Cuomo brings an A game to those debates, I just don't think you can say the race is over, because he's not up 50 points. He's up like 20 points or 10 points in a two-way. And 10 points is nothing, because you don't know even who the electorate's going to be.
Absolutely. But why is it that some insiders and experts like you look at the Democratic Party and think it would be a disaster for him to win? And is that part of the reason Hakeem Jeffries, Senator Schumer, Senator Gillibrand, Congressman Gillen, Congressman Goldman have not endorsed the guy?
I mean, I think they share a view of Donald Trump that Mondami would become the face of the Democratic Party, not just in the midterms, which I know worries Jeffries quite a bit. I reported this months ago that Jeffries thinks their chances of taking back the House majority are seriously imperiled just from the New York races if Mondami wins. And it takes a lot if you're the Democratic leader, Schumer or Jeffries, to not endorse the Democratic nominee. You got to have some really good reason. And their good reason is they don't think, as Donald Trump does, that's not good for the Democratic brand and into next year. And then even if Mondami tries to govern in a more moderate way than his socialism identification would suggest, he's still got the label. And so I'll be curious to see what right. Schumer and Jeffries do.
So I want to go to New Jersey real quick before you get to Kamala. And Jack Cittarelli, according to Emerson, is in a flat-footed tie with Mikey Sherrill. Let's just say it's within single digits, 4 or 5 points. And we know how close he got last time. So you have this, but you have Sherrill making some huge mistakes. Number one, we find out about her background. She's not allowed to walk in graduation because she's somehow embroiled in a cheating scandal. We don't have the details. And then we find out with Charlemagne the God, he sits down and says, hey, how did you end up with $7 million worth of investment since you became a congresswoman? She has absolutely no answer. She did not say a word about the endorsement of the Socialist Party and the lauding of Assata Shakur, a cop killer from 1977 who escaped to Cuba and passed away this weekend, who I think Barack Obama put on the most wanted list. That party salutes her life. She doesn't say a word. Who's running that campaign?
You know, it's funny. My two-way colleague, Dan Turrentine, reported when she won the nomination that people around her were talking about her as a potential 2028 presidential candidate. And on paper, that makes sense. But she's not proved to be a sure-footed candidate. And the Republican nominee has a ton of momentum. I spent yesterday in New Jersey. I drove across a pretty big part of the state, and I saw signs for him everywhere. Now, does that mean everything? No, but it doesn't mean nothing. There's grassroots support for him, and the public polling and the private polling are the same. And there's just something about New Jersey. There's something about the mood of that state. Historically, the president's party does not win the New Jersey and Virginia governorships the year after the voters, almost always, not always, but almost always, send a message. So that's really one to watch. It would not just be symbolic. It would suggest there's a populist, grassroots, anti-democratic sensibility in a what has been a blue state.
I mean, there's sometimes things that happen and the governor or president will get the blame for it. But there is a reason why utility bills are so high in New Jersey. They turned down a pipeline. They didn't want to be part of it. They decided they want to go green and go with their windmills. And those were decisions made by the Democratic governor, who's got 32% approval rating. She has said, well, I'm just going to freeze all prices. That's not a plan. Jack Cittarelli says, no, I'm putting that pipeline in. The price is going to come down. I'm all of the above. So she does have a problem.
Yeah, and you left that one factor, Brian.
Yeah.
Jack. Jack is a great Jersey name.
That's a good point.
Jack.
I know. Good point. Yeah. Lastly, the Vice President Kamala Harris, I believe she wrote the book to help her prospects for 2028. Most people don't. She just wanted to make book sales. I think in some way she thinks this will help by maybe looking at the debate stage and mentioning almost everybody she compete with and maybe setting the whole thing up. What do you think the objective was, and is she achieving it?
Well, I'm talking to my sources. If the point of the book was to help her political prospects, she executed on that as well as she executed during her presidential campaign. I don't think it's going to help her politically. She's made a lot of people really angry and made them question her judgment. It's number one on Amazon. I'll be curious to know how many actual copies she sold, because you can be number one on Amazon without selling a ton. But it's a mystery to me. I've known her a long time. I've studied her kind of decision-making process, such as it is. I can't figure out why someone didn't pull her aside and say, why are you criticizing all these people? And the other thing is, the Bidens have held their fire so far, but I'm not sure that'll sustain. I think that she's pissed off a lot of people, including a lot of people close to the former president.
How frustrated are people on the left that they have to talk about the Biden administration again? They were blaming James Comer for bringing up the auto pen investigation, but this is all self-inflicted, right?
There's not a person I know in the party who wants to be talking about the past. Not one.
Right now, if you were the name of the top three Democrats that are that should feel the most optimistic about being the nominee, here we are waiting a year from the midterms. Who do you think the three are?
Newsom, Shapiro, and Bennett.
And Bennett, why?
I just think they're best positioned to give people a sense that they can win a general election, they can raise the money, and they can connect to ordinary voters in early voting states.
Spencer Cox said something on 60 Minutes last night I wanted to bounce off you, and he basically said, and I'll paraphrase, and there was Scott Pelley said it, and he says, I agree. A guy like you who talks about reaching across the aisle and listening to the others would never win a primary for either party. And he said, I don't want to run for president. And basically, you're 100% right. Does Mark Halperin think Spencer Cox and Scott Pelley are right?
I'm not particularly bullish on Cox's chances, but I don't think that's right. Even Donald Trump talked about bringing the country together. Joe Biden did. Barack Obama did. Bill Clinton did. George W. Bush did. We're in a more polarized time, but there's tens of millions of voters who find it that appealing. So I don't agree. I think you have to speak to the aspirations of the American people, and you have to tend to your base. But I just don't agree with that. I think the right person can make that a reality.
All right, Mark Halperin, thanks so much. How do we get two-way?
Go to twoway.tv. Programs on YouTube and X. And if you go to twoway.tv or my social media accounts, you can read all about our programs. I host shows at 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. every day.
And you're also working with Megyn Kelly, right?
Doing a show with Megyn Kelly called Next Up that's on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Are you busier than ever?
I'm pretty busy. I don't know if I'm busier than ever, but I'm pretty busy.
Are you loving it?
And grateful to it. Yeah, I do. I love all my shows. I love the two-way community, the opportunity to talk to folks from around the country who get to come on the program, raise their hand, and be part of the conversation learning a ton. And I've never started a business before, so I'm learning about that, managing people's vacation days.
There you go. Mark, thanks so much. I learned
Brian, thank you. Great to see you.
Yeah, every time you're on, I always pick something up. I appreciate it. When we come back, we'll be able to take some of your calls, 1-866-408-7669. Then welcome in Congressman Dan Muser of Pennsylvania. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Are you watching Donald Trump? And by the way, that was the European team who just fended off a big a huge comeback by the U.S. team on the Ryder Cup Sunday in Bethpage, Long Island. And they were chanting, "Are you watching Donald Trump?" You know what Donald Trump wrote back? "Yes, I am. Congratulations." He was there on Friday, walked with Bryson DeChambeau. It was a security nightmare, but everyone on Long Island loved it. You know why? Because he flew in so low, and it was so obvious it was Air Force One. If you were anywhere in the vicinity, you saw it. And Nassau County won heavily for President Trump, and so did, I guess, the golfing world, because they went crazy for him. But look, everyone drank. A lot of guys drank too much and acted obnoxious. Somebody threw a beer at Rory McIlroy's wife. You got to be kidding me. Not only is that an okay, it's unbelievable in sports, but especially in golf. Now, I think it should be loud. You know, you could be cheering for the other guy. But as Rory McIlroy said after, you know, "I'm going against Scottie Scheffler, the best player in the world. And everyone's just yelling at me." Like, did anyone think about, like, cheering for Scottie Scheffler? Can you do something positive, basically? And I don't really know Rory McIlroy, but I guess people love to hate him. Because especially he came out and was the face of the anti-live movement. But he's come back. He's had a great season or two. And he just came out and gave the best speech about America. He said, "Look, I married an American woman. I live here now. It is the best country in the world. Whatever you want to accomplish, you can do it if you work hard enough." That is the message. Now, he could be saying it in order to get favorable reception from the crowd, which was playing in Long Island. And, of course, the next Ryder Cup will be in Europe. But I don't know. I mean, he doesn't really... hasn't said anything bad about America in the past that he had to make up for. So I just don't like it. I mean, I remember every time I sit in, if I have to sit in the upper decks ever in sports, people are so drunk, especially at football games, I don't even know why they go. I understand tailgating, but if you're so drunk you can't even remember the game, what is the point? Especially I watch people at the Super Bowl. I'm like, do you really need to be drunk going into the Super Bowl? I mean, you finally got tickets.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Leader Thune, aren't you going to have to compromise with Democrats in order to get a deal and keep the government open?
Compromise on what, Kristen? This is a simple 7-week funding resolution to allow us to do a normal appropriations process, something that Democrat senators have said that they want to see done, but something that Leader Schumer didn't do when they had the majority. They didn't do appropriations bills. This is new leadership. We're trying to do appropriation bills in the old-fashioned way, in an open, transparent way. I don't know what we're supposed to be negotiating. This is a simple, straightforward deal to keep the government running. So for the next 7 weeks, we have an opportunity to finish the appropriations process.
And that is Senator Thune, Majority Leader, who is going to be meeting along with Speaker Johnson, President Trump, Hakeem Jeffries, and Senator Schumer today in order to avoid a government shutdown. With us in studio, if you're watching the stream, you can see him, Congressman Dan Muser of Pennsylvania. He participated in the Tunnel to Towers run on Sunday. I was able to do that once 2 years ago. It was a fantastic experience. So before we talk about the shutdown, talk about something good.
Yeah.
Talk about why was it important for you to go, and you saw the thousands that showed up. Is it amazing 24 years later?
You know what, Brian? It was one of the best events I've participated in, and I don't know how long. I mean, it was just so inspiring. I mean... in honor of Stephen Siller, of course, what he did, you know, fireman, worked all night, got off duty, got in his car, started driving home, heard about the attack, went back to the firehouse. His trucks were gone from his firehouse. The trucks were gone in Brooklyn, put on all his stuff, all his gear, ran through the battery tunnel, jogged through it 3.5 miles. That's the run we did into a burning building. Right. Imagine running up and watching two towers on fire as you approach. And then he goes into that building, goes up and gives his life, saving people. I mean, and I'll tell you what, the inspiration. I mean, talk about red, white and blue coming together. I mean, it was absolutely marvelous. I think everybody we had over 30,000 people there yesterday. And Frank Siller, what an incredible guy. Joe Piscopo was there. I told you all kinds of the fire commissioner. It was really just a great event. All walks of life. You know, you had the military, you had Army, Air Force, young people, yeah. Older people.
Firefighters were there, too. Some of them ran with their equipment.
Thousands,
Fox had a big team there.
Fox is a huge supporter of it. Right. And more Democrats need to come out. For some reason, Democrats think that it's more of a Republican thing, but there are definitely some there. Yeah. Right. And it was just, you know, it was just a great human race thing. Nothing racial about it. It was just a lot of different people, all walks of life. It was fantastic. And I'll tell you what, next year, the 25th anniversary is, and we have the 250th of our country and everything. It's going to be that much more special. So I'm looking to get a good group of congressional caucus there and, just really take part in something that's great for America. Great.
And by the way, if you don't know, the congressman's in great shape. He has no problem with 3 and 5K, 3.5 miles. But my daughter was there, too, said it was a great event. So let's talk about the shutdown. I don't see anything stopping it. Right. I mean, it looks like it's going to happen. They don't want it to continue to fund the government at the current rates, even though it's Joe Biden's rates. This is the Biden budget.
Yeah, it is the Biden budget. And that's the ridiculous part. Right. I mean, 90% of it is the 24 budget, the Biden budget. There's really no changes to it. And there's a reason behind that. Republicans need to understand. Look, we got the one big, beautiful bill done that was took up a lot of time. Obviously, we're doing the appropriations bill. There's regular order coming out of this in 7 weeks on November 21st.
Do you think you'll get all 12 done?
Yeah, we're determined to. Our chairman of appropriations, Tom Cole, real good friend of mine, and all the other committee members, we do, and over that 7 week period, we actually do. And then we'll vote on a budget and move on from there. And the idea that they're holding this up or looking to shut down the government, you know, there's really only one reason for this. They're mad. The Democrats are mad. They're mad the Trump agenda is doing well. They're mad our economy is doing well. They're mad more people are registering as Republicans and Democrats. They're mad the left wing of their party is leading the way and invigorating their base. And they're trying to do something about it. And we see what they're doing about it. They're vilifying Republicans in a horrible way. And they want to stop any way they can, even if it causes more damage than anybody would like.
Hughes, that's a shutdown. Yeah, here's Chuck Schumer, cut four.
The meeting is a first step, but only a first step. We need a serious negotiation. Now, if the president at this meeting is going to rant and just yell at Democrats and talk about all his alleged grievances and say this, that, and the other thing, we won't get anything done. But my hope is it'll be a serious negotiation. God forbid the Republicans shut the government down. The American people will know it's on their back. First, they're in charge. They have the House, they have the Senate, they have the presidency. So they know it's in charge. They're in charge. Second, everyone knows that you need a bipartisan negotiation to get this done. The American people do. But third, there is going to be huge pressure on Republican senators, congressmen, and even Trump to do something about this horrible health care crisis.
So it's your fault. It's your fault. But they're like, we don't know you need 60 votes.
Well, fortunately, Chuck Schumer is probably the least trustworthy politician out there, perhaps. And that's one of his problems. He's afraid of his base leaving him. So he's got to show that he's fighting. He's got to show he's a tough guy. He's putting politics completely ahead of the people. And then bring in Hakeem Jeffries. I got to tell you something. I don't dislike many people in the U.S. House, Republican or Democrats. But when someone is as phony as a minority leader, Hakeem Jeffries, okay, 90% of the time he says something, I know as a fact it's completely false. And the case
that he doesn't believe it, or you just think he has it wrong?
I think he deliberately has it wrong because he's got the only way to express, to try to sound rational, is to make things up. The case that they originally made, trying to say we had a promise not to ever do any reductions or rescissions moving forward. We had to change basically some of the most important provisions in the OBB. And then now he comes up with this ACA, the Affordable Care Act changes. This only came up 9 days ago. You know, they weren't even smart enough to use this maybe as leverage. They're now using it to hold the whole budget hostage. We can do both. We can keep the government open and work on and put together, talk about negotiating and compromise. There's a couple of things in the ACA that need to be fixed. Not many, but a few things. I don't even think Democrats are okay with people earning $500,000 or more are now receiving subsidies for the Affordable Care Act. That's simply not right, and that needs to be corrected.
Well, that, and also a lot of this stuff, I understand, happened during the pandemic.
Exactly.
So I guess they decided to pay. Senator Mark Wayne Mullen was saying that the government was paying 4% of their premiums to everybody because they were having trouble affording things, not working for whatever reason, along with unemployment and all the other problems that we put out there and extended the pain. But you got to roll that back. And they're saying, no, you want to cut health care.
Right. And that's completely false. And what Mark Wayne said is completely right. Nearly 33% of the payments of ACA go to insurance companies that aren't providing any services. Right. It wasn't written right, but it was done as a temporary plan, not permanent, during COVID. So, yes, that should be, that certainly should be corrected.
So what do you, what is going on in Pennsylvania? People are saying, looking at that state and saying, by the year, it is getting more and more Republicans.
Yeah.
It is trending more and more mm-hmm. red. Mm-hmm. That wasn't the case a few years ago. Mm-mm. They were talking about, well, what's happened with the Republican Party? They lost their direction. You know, Trump has split the party. People weren't buying him. They couldn't get into him. You know, they became anti-Trump. Well, most of those people are gone, and Pennsylvania switched. Can you explain what happened?
Oh, definitely. Look, we're a working, you know, we're coal cracker country in my neck of the woods. We're steel manufacturers, you know, a lot of blue collar, of course, a lot of rural. These were traditional Democrats, okay? And it's the proverbial, the party left them. They don't want to leave the party. The party has become extreme. The party is about San Francisco, Nancy Pelosi style elitists.
But they left a Democratic governor, didn't they?
They left to...
They elected a Democratic governor.
Well, we did. We did, and very, very unfortunately. And now I will tell you this, though. When we elected Wolf, there was about a 900,000 disparity between Democrats and Republicans. When we elected Shapiro, it was whittled down to about 350,000.
Benefit Democrats.
Democrats over Republicans. Today, it's less than 100,000. So there's been a lot of movement in that direction. And now on the same note, you got somebody like Josh Shapiro, who's severely left wing. He's very, very liberal, and he has really no
plan. That's not his reputation. But you say when you drill down on his record, it's right. A different story.
Absolutely. I mean, he wants to emulate Connecticut and Massachusetts as opposed to Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, the Carolinas, Texas. And if we had a governor, and I hope we do, in come 2026, got Stacey Garrity, good friend of mine, is our endorsed candidate. She will have a plan. We will have a plan that can put Pennsylvania in the top 10 rather than be in the bottom 10 in every category.
Well, one of the big stories is Senator Fetterman appearing with Senator McCormick, a Democrat and Republican, and has no problem bucking his party. And all of a sudden, about 2 months ago, all these stories start popping up in the New York Times and Washington Post, how Senator Fetterman, his staff is unhappy with him. He has no friends in Congress. He's aloof. I don't know if it's related. It doesn't seem to be that way. Cut 8.
But, I mean, on the left, you've got such extremes. Would you consider switching parties?
No, I'm not going to switch, you know, but I'm just going to be an independent voice in the Democratic Party. I'm not going to be afraid if people... I mean, and if there are groups attacking a Democrat, you know, the last one in Pennsylvania, then that's, to me, that's part of the problem, you know, in our party. And if you want a Democrat that's going to call people Nazis or fascists or all these kinds of things, well, I'm not going to be that guy.
So how do you feel? Who's the Senator Fetterman you knew when he was lieutenant governor and then he has his stroke? And basically just coasted to a win over Oz by a couple of points. Mm-hmm. And are you surprised this is the version we're getting now?
I am. As lieutenant governor, yeah, he was a real left-wing kind of guy. Yeah, and mayor. And that's where he wanted to be. I mean, he was big on marijuana. He was just big on anything, high levels of spending, anything that was anti-traditional fiscal, you know, responsibility. He was very, very left-wing. Clearly, you know, then I began to say when he showed some more common sense, you know, I used the phrase, even a broken clock is right twice a day. But he's been showing, I have to admit, a lot of courage. You know, he's willing to call things out. He's willing to use common sense. He's willing to be rational. He's willing to buck the crazed base of vitriolic left wingers. And what really important in this day and age of threats and violence, he's not going there. He might call somebody, I don't like that person. I think they're foolish, but he's not going to call him a Nazi or part of the Gestapo like most of like a Hakeem Jeffries and Schumer is willing to do.
See, what's interesting is that he also went out of his way to say, I'm not for a lockout.
Yeah.
So he's not going to do it. He's going to vote with Republicans in the Senate. Number two, he's pro-Israel. What is hard to understand about that?
And he's pro-Israel. Legal immigration.
Yeah. Yeah. He's for reinforcing the border.
Yeah.
So that's why people think he might flip. Remember, they tried to get Joe Manchin to flip, but he ended up as an independent. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts among Democratic circles, is he destroying his career? Will he have trouble getting, will they try to run somebody else against him? But you know Pennsylvania. Yeah. That could backfire.
Probably. They're going to run someone. He'll have a primary fight. Admittedly, if he is their candidate, it makes it more difficult since he's shown rationality to beat him in the general. I will tell you, though, look, he votes with us maybe 15% of the time. That's about all. Some of these important positions are appreciated, and that's truly where I think someone who cares about governing, not just politics, should be. But on the same note, he still votes against us a good 80% of the time.
You're from New York. How astounded are you that we're looking at a mayor's race that has a socialist up by 20 points? Mm-hmm. Yesterday, Eric Adams dropped out, leading Curtis Sliwa, Cuomo, and Mamdani. Yeah. Here's Sliwa yesterday on will he drop out. Cut 16.
About time the soap opera's open. One down, two more to go. 37 days, 37 nights. I'm campaigning 20 hours a day, as you can see, in the streets. None of the other candidates are in the streets, and definitely not in the subways. Let the voters decide November 4th.
He says he's not going anywhere. Does it matter nationally, this mayor's race? Because it's got the national spotlight. And Curtis, as a Republican, would you want to see him drop out?
Yeah.
Congressman Muser.
I don't think Curtis is going to drop out, right? I mean, I don't know what would be the best move for us to keep a communist from being the mayor of New York City. The people got to really be paying attention to this. I mean, this guy truly is just not even qualified. Okay, he's got a bit of a charismatic personality, but his ideas are as antithetical to what's needed for New York. I mean, I'm not going to say he's pro crime, but he's very much anti police. He's pro taxes. It's already too costly to live in New York. And he's pro basically socialism, which means a bigger government and more spending. So what in the world is he going to bring to the table? Andrew Cuomo, I mean, he's lost everybody's trust, right? See, that's the problem. I mean, I drove in a cab this morning. I asked the cab driver his thoughts. He goes, I can't vote for Cuomo. This guy lives up in Harlem. He said, he doesn't have my trust. He did the wrong thing by people. So he's
no cash bail. He's the one who stopped the fracking.
Yeah.
He's the one who kept natural gas from passing through New York. Okay. And that's why our utility price so high. He shut down a nuclear plant without anything to replace it. He made so many terrible moves.
Right. And look at COVID, right? Here, we go back.
The worst.
Right. He couldn't have been any worse.
Right. So
and it's not funny. It was deadly. It was.
Yeah. And I just think last question, Congressman. On some level, even though I hate it and I'd rather him not win, do the Republicans want him to win, Mamdani, so they can make him the face of the Democratic Party?
I don't think so. I mean, you look at what the silver lining might be, but no, I think we care more about our society. I certainly care more about New York City, right? I mean, the days of Giuliani, right, where we were tough on crime. Where we were tried everything we could to bring in more small businesses, where New York was thriving, where New York felt safe and people felt welcome. Today, I mean, let's face it. I mean, people have been being chased out.
Right.
And back to Adams for a minute. I mean, you got to hand it to him a little bit, too, showing the courage to drop out for the betterment of New York, as opposed to, his looking after himself.
Absolutely. Eric Adams, one and done, four and done, but one term and done. Yeah. Congressman Dan Muser, thanks so much of Pennsylvania. It was great of you to give you time to run in that Tunnels to Towers race yesterday. And I'll see you out there next year for sure.
Outstanding. That's great, Brian. You're the best. Appreciate you.
Back in a moment.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's the Will Cain Show. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday on FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss a show. Get the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
It's very, very unfortunate that, again, Donald Trump and his, you know, people who are supporting him refuse, again, to acknowledge that and move on.
I don't see any case against me. I have looked back on all of my actions and decisions, and with John Durham, the special counsel, and others that have looked at what we did, that it was certainly consistent with our legal authorities and with the laws.
John Brennan is dreaming if he doesn't think he's vulnerable and susceptible. You know, for one thing for sure, he told Congress that the... He told Trey Gowdy the dossier really played no role in for the getting the FISA warning or in the investigation. Really? Because that's not what you said behind the scenes. Emails have emerged you saying, you know, the dossier is important. Doesn't it sound right? Doesn't it sound correct? And that he was in on the emergency meeting in December with Barack Obama, and they launched this whole thing. He knew damn well the person who commissioned it was Hillary Clinton. So, I mean, he continues to go on these friendly outlets, and that's his prerogative, but they don't ask him anything. Like, look, you launched a whole inquiry into a sitting president with the objective of getting him impeached, and there's nothing that makes it look any different than that. Of course, he'll deny it. Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Janice Dean. Join me every Sunday as I focus on stories of hope and people who are truly rays of sunshine in their community and across the world.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for listening. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. We're back in action today. This hour, we're going to be joined by Stephen Moore, former chief of staff at the U.S. House of Representatives and founder of the Ukrainian Freedom Project, and Anna Shevtsova, the chief operating officer of the Ukraine Freedom Project. She's just back from Ukraine. And, of course, there's a lot of encouraging news coming from the West that we seem to be understanding the threat, which is Russia, which is important, too. We're also understanding that Bibi Netanyahu is making his way towards the White House. It's going to be one of two big meetings the president has today. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
The president will be speaking to our friends in Qatar who have served as incredible intermediaries between the United States and Hamas, and we've had some direct talks with them as well. This is why we've drafted a 21-point, incredibly detailed plan that we know can be and must be agreeable to both sides.
Carolyn Leavitt on with Fox and Friends with us today on the deal in Gaza. It's 21 points, as she mentioned. All the hostages get out, prisoners get out for the Palestinians. And maybe Tony Blair or someone else gets in charge of the transition.
Number two.
This campaign was for the underserved, the marginalized, the abandoned, and betrayed by government. Since then, it has been my honor to be your mayor.
He's out. Mayor Adams gives up on this reelection bid. What does it mean for the entire race? Does it mean good or bad things for socialists? Zohran Mamdani, Cuomo, and Sliwa are left. We'll talk about it.
Number one.
A shutdown looks likely at this point, based on my conversation this morning with President Trump. He says both sides are at a stalemate. Quote, I just don't know how we are going to solve this issue. That makes a shutdown quite likely.
Shutdown, countdown to the shutdown. Hail Mary meeting today in the Oval Office as leaders of all sides convene to avoid Tuesday night's outage. The stakes, the deal, and why the Dems are simply overplaying their hand. And one of the things I thought the president could do is, you know, he's got this rescission package. Essentially what that means is, let's say you have a certain amount of money and it's going to certain places. What he does is bring up to Congress and say, I want to pull that money back. And then they have to vote, get out of committee, put it on a big vote, on a majority rule, they take it out. And so he saved $9 billion of funding NPR. He doesn't want to do it. It's a partisan organization. You're helping the Democrats, and it's not supposed to be what their mandate is. A certain aid for on U.S. aid program, which is now under the Secretary of State's auspices, he receded that. Okay? If you are Chuck Schumer, maybe you say to the president, promise not to rescind any of the money that's been appropriated for the next 3 months, and we got a deal. Because continuing to fund the government at Joe Biden's rates is something that shouldn't really be controversial, should it? I mean, it basically what they're asking for is to restore some subsidies given during the pandemic for health care. Really? They want $40 billion that was put there. Evidently, that money was put aside to slice 4% off everyone's premiums on health care. During the pandemic, we did extreme things. Why would we not take that money back? Because you're Joe Biden and you don't take anything back. You love spending because rich people are terrible. So federal agencies will run out of money at midnight on midnight Tuesday. It's to be the first time today, 3 o'clock, that Donald Trump ever sat down with House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries. Jeffries, by the way, has routinely called Trump a con man. Jeffries leads a caucus that has absolutely no patience for Trump or any interest in helping him, to say the least. This according to Punchbowl. Understood. I don't think there's any argument there. Senator Thune will also be there. He is not for having this meeting, but wants to participate in it to make sure it doesn't implode like the one with Schumer and Pelosi a couple of times it happened last time around. So we'll see what happens on the shutdown. Senator Thune's as level-headed as it comes. He says there's no reason for us to give in at all. We're not asking for anything. We just want to continue to fund the government at the current levels. Here's what Senator Thune, how he described what the reality is, despite what the talking points are, when it comes to this insurance. Because Democrats think when they say health insurance, they're winning, because that's a hot topic for them. When you talk about Republicans, when they talk about crime and law enforcement, they're usually winning there. Cut six.
But Leader Thune, open enrollment starts in November, November 1st. You just said you are open to potentially negotiating over that. As you know, if they do expire, the number of uninsured people in your state of South Dakota would rise by about 20,000. So why not negotiate now and get this deal done for the people of your state?
Well, the deal is not ready to be done. The government is going to close on Tuesday night at midnight. Let's keep the government open. Let's go to work on that issue. And yes, I mean, some of the notices are going to start going out. The program wouldn't end until the end of the year. And the program doesn't end. These were plus-ups that were done in response to COVID. These were enhancements. And it's a program, Kristen, as I said, that is fraught with waste, fraud, and abuse.
And he went on to say, look, you want me to negotiate? What? What am I negotiating? We're not doing a budget. Negotiations go in committee with the appropriations. They put them forward. In theory, they go to committee. Cut five.
Leader Thune, aren't you going to have to compromise with Democrats in order to get a deal and keep the government open?
Compromise on what, Kristen? This is a simple 7-week funding resolution to allow us to do a normal appropriations process, something that Democrat senators have said that they want to see done, but something that Leader Schumer didn't do when they had the majority. They didn't do appropriations bills. This is new leadership. We're trying to do appropriation bills in the old-fashioned way, in an open, transparent way. I don't know what we're supposed to be negotiating. This is a simple, straightforward deal to keep the government running. So for the next 7 weeks, we have an opportunity to finish the appropriations process.
I hear his exasperation for a mellow guy. You know, almost like Mitch McConnell was a bit of a character, a comic book character, by the way he held himself, and sadly he got old. But Senator Thune is somebody really respected. He's not a firebrand. You can't get him angry. He's kind enough to come in here a lot. I see him on and off camera, on and off mic. And he just doesn't rattle, number one. Number two, he's very logical. He's from South Dakota. That's very typical. Like, for example, he'll come out and say, look, I've clashed with the president. I clashed with the president when it comes to tariffs. He says, I'm not for him. He said, I got a lot of farmers, and we've focused on soybeans. It's been an unbelievable crop. And for some reason, China is choosing to buy soybeans from, I think, Brazil and Argentina, where you're actually paying more money rather than buy ours because they're negotiating all these different tariffs. And China thinks that if you hurt the farmers, you hurt President Trump. That's something the president should be talking about. But the president came back and said, yeah, if we have to, we'll take some of the tariff money and give it to the farmers because they are his base. But what the farmers want is to sell their stuff. They don't want to grow it and just watch it rot. So either find new markets or go into China and say, buy our soybeans. It can actually make a difference in your budget and help you out. Is that possible? The other thing here, by the way, Robert Costa talked to the president. He's on CBS Face the Nation. Here's what the president told CBS. Cut one.
A shutdown looks likely at this point, based on my conversation this morning with President Trump. He says both sides are at a stalemate. Democrats want to extend health care subsidies that were part of the Affordable Care Act. But President Trump said his focus on health care is on preventing undocumented migrants from having access to any of the U.S. health care system. Now, it's illegal for any non-citizen to have that sort of access. But President Trump says we're not going to have it, quote, we're not going to allow it in terms of moving forward on any discussion unless the Democrats come to his side on health care and don't focus on the subsidies. But based on my conversations with top Democrats, that's not going to happen. So President Trump told me, quote, I just don't know how we are going to solve this issue. That makes a shutdown quite likely.
So I think it is likely. And then I'm just wondering the aftermath. So after they meet, they're going to go out to the microphones in front of the White House. They're going to say the president would not budge. He doesn't care about a shutdown. Doesn't care about people. I'm fighting for everyone's health care. And what they add is symbolism because Democrats are so upset that they were steamrolled. You have Kamala Harris telling everyone it's the closest election of the 21st century, and it wasn't. And every Democrat knows it. They lose the House, they lose the Senate. So they are sitting here and say, my leverage is seven votes in the Senate. And to get those seven votes, I'm going to need a concession. I don't know how it ends. I really don't. Because I think the president's going to make it clear behind closed doors. He's going to start firing people. And he's going to start cutting down the government without any congressional oversight. Of course, they'll challenge him and tell him he can't, but he's going to do it anyway. The other area I want to discuss is with ICE. Over the weekend, ICE was in action in Chicago, and Chicago's mayor responded this way. I'm closely monitoring the confirmed reports of federal agents on Michigan Avenue. While Chicagoans and visitors enjoying another generous Sunday, gorgeous Sunday, they are being intimidated, threatened by mass federal agents flaunting automatic weapons for no apparent reason. Really? They're picking up illegals that they're following into cities like yours who let all these illegals in and let them live in airports, many of which are criminals. They are doing investigations and doing some work. So the mayor continues to not understand what Dallas was when a gunman went on top of a roof and just started randomly shooting up an ICE office. Doesn't care. He's going to tell everybody that ICE is the bad guys. In a post yesterday, the DHS put this up. This week, a deranged gunman opened up fire on an ICE Dallas office with a clear mission to murder and terrorize ICE officials. Secretary Noem will not back down. We will not rest until every violent terrorist thug is arrested. In Chicago, federal law enforcement is arresting dozens of cowardly anti-ICE rioters who are laying siege on the ICE facility attempting to obstruct law enforcement. That's the story. Greg Bovino, a Border Patrol chief working in Chicago, said the agents, they were arresting people based on many different factors, including his agents have the intelligence and experience to know when something indicates there is illegals in a particular place or location. But it didn't stop there. Portland over the weekend. You know, there's been nonstop, and I know, don't blame yourself if you didn't pick up on this, but Portland, which is out of control, just descending into chaos. Talk to anybody who works at Nike. They used to be so proud of Portland, and now they can't even go to Portland, the city. So now they're demonstrating in front of the National Guard office, in front of the ICE office, in front of all the government buildings. So President Trump's had it. He's going to send in troops, and he's going to send in the National Guard. To get rid of what he says are woke protesters. So they are now suing President Trump not to deploy troops to stop the anarchy. So think about this. The DHS has arrested 11 people, violent rioters. They were arrested last night in Chicago, outside in Chicago, and there were 10 arrested over in Portland. So they're arresting these people, but they need some help. That's what National Guard is for, to guard federal buildings, and they're going to do it. Now, there's federal agents that I was learning about today. They were used the first time in Portland, and they would have a little bit more latitude to act in the region. But it's amazing. When you see the city descend into chaos and the president wants to take action unlike any other president, he is not comfortable with cities just going to hell. He decides to take action, and then they focus the attention on him. What I like is when things like happen in Baltimore and in Los Angeles, they started using state police in the city to get things under control so Donald Trump doesn't come. They did the same thing in New Mexico, looked at their major cities so Donald Trump doesn't show up. They want to crack down on themselves. That's what I hope happens in Portland, but they don't seem to be getting the signal. They're too left to ever understand what's right. When we come back, I'll be able to take some of your calls. 1-866-408-7669. Bottom of the hour, we talk Ukraine. You listen to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
This is Jason Chaffetz from the Jason in the House podcast. Join me every Monday to dive deeper into the latest political headlines and chat with remarkable guests.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com
or wherever you download podcasts.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I don't think we should ever accept that in golf. I think golf should be held to a higher standard than what was seen out there this week. Golf has the ability to unite people. Golf teaches you very good life lessons. It teaches you etiquette. It teaches you how to play by the rules. It teaches you how to respect people. And, you know, sometimes this week we didn't see that. So, this should not be what is acceptable in the Ryder Cup. But, you know, we will be making sure to say to our fans in Ireland in 2027 that what happened here this week is not acceptable. And it's, you know, come and support your home team. You know, come and support your team. You know, I think if I was an American, I would be annoyed that people... I didn't hear a lot of shouts for Scotty today, but I heard a lot of shouts against me. And it's like, support your players. You know, that's the thing. So, look, it was a rough week for all of us, but at the same time, you know, we shut them up by our performance and how we played, and we tried to... You know, I chirped back a few times because it got to me a few times, but we tried to handle everything that came our way with class and poise, and for the most part, I felt like we did that.
And Rory McIlroy evidently was in the eye of the storm yesterday with the fans, and with something was totally out of control. One fan, I think they got him on tape, threw a full beer at his wife. I don't care what she said defending her husband. What are you thinking, throwing a beer on anybody, number one? Number two is, if you got to go to the course, you want to have a couple of drinks, that's great. But you can't control yourself. You get so drunk, you act like a child. And look, I know this is going to be in New York, just like the U.S. Open. It used to be a lot more behaved, but New York, U.S. Open, it was always very loud and raucous. Now the U.S. Open... people are talking about it. They smell pot everywhere. People are talking and walking around in between points. They say they lost etiquette there. So now the Ryder Cup comes every few years, decides to go to Bethpage, this course that's been the home at U.S. Open before, and it's a perfect setting, Long Island, the perfect backdrop. The weather cooperated. Europe had three great days, and then yesterday the U.S. had a fantastic day, almost came back and won it. But during that time... I assume people are drunk. I'm just going to give them the benefit of the doubt that they don't act like that when they're sober. Just start harassing people. You expect it to be loud. You want it to be different. You see the way the players are hugging each other and high-fiving each other, and they get into little spats with each other, walking from hole to hole. I saw one caddy was yelling at another player. I think it was Fleetwood. I had a problem with one of the caddies walking across his line, putting line. Okay, fine. I like that. I like that they're high-fiving each other. And you should show some... You should show some emotion. That's the point of it, and it is New York. But when you start getting that drunk and start harassing the players as if you're more important than the player, keep in mind, you're watching their playing. What they've learned to do in their lives in that game is something I couldn't even dream of. And that gives you the right as a fan to talk and to comment, but it doesn't give you the right to be rude and interrupt people's swing. At one point, they say McIlroy just refused to hit, because people were just screaming at him to that level. He said, I'm not going to hit the ball. So it stopped the whole tournament. It's embarrassing. And I remember I was at the Denver Giant game, and I got tickets from somebody, and I thought they'd be great tickets because they were on the Broncos. And it turns out the Giants put the Bronco fans on the third level at the old Giant Stadium. And my son, who was like 9 at the time, so I'm like, okay, he's not going to know how bad these tickets are. It doesn't matter. He could see the field. And people were so out of control and drunk and just saying the craziest, crassest things. And they've been tailgating and getting hammered. I don't understand the point. There's got to be some type of decorum. I know your life is full of stress, but you can't just empty your spleen at players and at fellow fans and jeopardize people, and you should look around and see kids around. There were a lot of kids at that tournament. You think they needed to hear that? So, a great tournament, unbelievable setting, drama at the end, the President of the United States shows up, Michael Jordan was there, all these celebrities arrived in. We saw the local airport had all these private jets there. They've never seen a busier day. But that's what people are going to walk away and think about, along with Europe winning. When we come back, we go inside a real story, the Ukraine. Are they about to get the backing they deserve? Are they about to be able to hit into Russia proper? It's an escalation in order to de-escalate. Stephen Moore is going to be with us. Don't move. Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday at FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Now, what I saw in Ukraine, which is what's really incredible, is that they are winning modern warfare. What they're doing with their anti-drone technology, I mean, they are really the tech bros of the future. Mm-hmm. They are implementing on the front line anti-drone air defense technology that is winning this war. With our help and assistance, which they're going to continue to need for the long-range systems that Russia's bringing in and that are attacking Kyiv with, but what their anti-drone technology that no one else has, that they are implementing, they are winning this war. We need to be on the side of that war of the future that they're winning and support Ukraine.
So that is Mike Turner, congressman from Ohio, talking about his visit to Ukraine and what he found. Stephen Moore is with us now, former chief of staff of the U.S. House and founder of the Ukrainian Freedom Project. Stephen, welcome back. Two weeks ago, you were in Ukraine, right?
Yeah, 2 weeks ago, I was about 10 miles from the Russians. And we were taking a car to a doctor whose car and entire hospital had been blown up by the Russians. We couldn't help with the hospital, but we brought him a car so at least he could go to the other hospitals in the area.
So what is your focus in the region?
Well, you know, we're doing a bunch of things. One, in general, the Ukraine Freedom Project just goes to places that other people won't go and gets back the correct information, because not all your listeners, probably all your listeners are getting good information, but there's not everyone is giving that information that you're giving. And so we're trying to help get good information.
So when you heard Congressman Turner say that in many ways they're winning and the drone technology is balancing out this power, is he being overly optimistic?
Not at all. And we've been telling people this for a long time, is that by almost every measure, Ukraine is winning this war. And what the measure by which Russia is winning, they're taking tiny amounts of land at a cost of tens of thousands of soldiers. And I'll give you a metric that will relate to your listeners. And that is that Putin has lost enough soldiers just in this year to fill Arrowhead Stadium three times, to take a chunk of land equal to less than half of Palm Beach County, Florida, the president's county. So, you know, it's a medium-sized county. They couldn't even take enough to take all of it. So
they feel like they're doing damage with the drone technology,
yeah.
Something that wasn't even there. It's accelerating at a dizzying pace, and it's up to Ukraine to stay ahead of it. And I'm hearing great things about their ability, especially come December, January of this year, ability to really put up that wall, a virtual wall against Ukraine.
Yeah.
Against Russia. Drones.
Yeah. Well, you know, them and Poland and Estonia and Finland and many of the other countries that have been attacked by drones or had their air
Romania. Airspace.
Yeah.
Belgium.
Yeah. Well, you know, so here's something that we've done that illustrates what's going on in our role, is that there's something called the Baltic Security Initiative, and it's about a $230 million funding from the U.S. government to go to Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia, who are on the front lines. And we were in Estonia about 3 weeks ago when the U.S. government cut off that funding, and it's about 17 minutes of federal spending, so it's like almost nothing. But what happened shortly after that is Vladimir Putin sent three MiG jets into Estonian airspace. You know, there's a saying among the Russians. Lenin said it first: take your bayonet, push in. If you feel something soft, keep pushing. If you feel steel, don't push. So when we cut off this sort of funding to our allies, Vladimir Putin's watching, and he pushes harder.
Makes no sense.
Yeah.
It makes absolutely no sense. I want you to hear Keith Kellogg, who I think the president's beginning to listen to, because he's a guy on the ground in Ukraine who was there as a contractor during the Biden years, and now is his president's advisor there. This is the one where he talked about what Zelensky requested of the president.
Are you saying, though, that it is the president's position that Ukraine
can conduct long-range strikes into Russia, that has been authorized by the president?
I think reading what he has said and reading what Vice President Vance has said, as well as Secretary Rubio, the answer is yes. Use the ability to hit deep. There are no such things as sanctuaries. That's one of the reasons I believe that this last week, and it has been confirmed, that President Zelensky asked President Trump to get Tomahawk missiles, which give you a depth. They're really good systems. America makes the best systems in the world.
So do you think we should give them the Tomahawks? And then if we start hitting in Moscow, the big fear among the Biden administration was escalation.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, I think that you can look back on Putin's statements and you know, he said he's going to use nukes like 26 times. Like if Finland gets into NATO, he's going to use nukes. If F-16s come into Ukraine, he's going to use nukes. And so Putin does, you know, what that does to Putin is that emboldens him. And it's part of their plan. You know, there's, if you look at their propaganda plan, which has been fished out of a Kremlin email box, it says, you know, create a nuclear psychosis in the West. And a psychosis, their words, means something that's not there. And yeah, I think it's a great idea because, again, Putin responds to strength. And the Biden administration, if they had let Ukraine use American weapons inside Russia in 2023, you and I would be here talking about sports because, the war would be over.
All right. I want you to hear what Mike Turner said that he found out when he went there. Cut 27.
Will the president lift restrictions on Ukraine's ability to use long-range weapons to actually attack Russia?
Well, and he really needs to do so, because what's happening with that pressure that's on the front line...
Because he has the old Biden policy.
Right, he does, and that's what he needs to release, because with the pressure on the front line and the fact that Ukraine has developed anti-drone technology where they're taking down Russian drones, they're using their own drones to attack Russia, but Russia has long-range weapons that they're attacking that front line. Mm-hmm. Ukraine needs to have the ability to use long-range weapons to push Russia back. And when they're able to do that, they will get their territory back. If they are able to do that, they will win this war.
Because they're better fighters and they know what they're fighting for.
Yeah. Oh, you know, the courage and the bravery. I talked to folks at the front just 2 weeks ago, and we were in one of those places that Putin hasn't been able to take by force, but wants to take diplomatically, right? He's like, oh, just give me this strip of land. And everyone that I talked to was like, you know, I will die fighting for this strip of land because it's my strip of land. And I know what's happening over there where the Russians occupy, which is that people are being tortured, women are being raped. Putin has shut down every church in occupied Ukraine. For Catholics, there's not a single Catholic priest left in occupied Ukraine because they've all been tortured or murdered or run out of town. So nobody wants to live like that.
How do you feel about Zelensky just saying, after the war, I'm not running for re-election? How did that go over?
Yeah. Zelensky is popular right now among Ukrainians because he's their president and they're at war. And ironically, when President Trump attacked him in the Oval Office, in February, it actually raised his popularity, kind of like, you know, you can't do that to our president. Only we can do that to our president. And So I think it's good, man. I think that they need to demonstrate that there are a democracy and that this is not a power play. And it's really not. It's just a bunch of people trying to survive the best they can at the hands of the second largest military in the world. And they're winning again. 3.5 years they've stood up the Russians.
What about Zelensky's popularity? They say he's about 54%. I mean, but you have some distinct party differences. But it seems as though the Klitschkos and Poroshenko, those are the ones I know that you probably know more. They keep their powder dry. I don't see a lot of friction among politicians. But what do you see on Ukrainian TV?
There's a little bit here and there. Everybody, you know, looks in the mirror and sees the next president of Ukraine in the mirror, right? And so the polling shows that the Ukrainians want a military leader, and that would be the current ambassador to England, Zelensky. Thank you, Zelensky. And he was the general, and prior to the current one, he was the general for the first half of the war. People like him, and people want a military leader to keep them safe from the Russians, and that's, I think, what we'll see in the next election.
Very interesting. Here's more from Keith Kellogg when he talked about this has to be an American problem, too.
My biggest concern is that a mistake can happen, and that causes for a larger escalation, be it the attacks by the drones into Poland or the aircraft that are overflying Estonia, whatever it's going to be, you have to be very, very careful about it. And when I was up at the UN this last week, I talked to the National Security Advisor for the Japanese, Masataka Okano, and he said, hey, by the way, make sure you understand this is internationalized.
Yeah.
And what he meant by that is he said, in our neck of the woods, the Chinese are being very, very aggressive about it, as are the North Koreans. So this is just not only a European issue. This is a global issue.
Right. I think we fully understand that. I hope so, because the president said, well, you know, it's not our war. But Ukraine, by the way, there was a meeting in Moscow, and they had envoys from Britain, France, Germany yesterday, and Ukraine was invited to observe. And they talked about how their new stand when it comes to jets going into their airspace. They said they're going to shoot them down. The Russians took very copious notes on that. Europe has also said they're going to expand their drone wall among NATO allies, and they're going to use Ukraine technology to do it.
Yeah.
Germany just committed to $90 billion already to procure weapons, only 9% from us. And their chancellor came out and said all that frozen Russian funds should be dispersed to Ukraine. That is very different.
Oh, yeah, man. This is the turnaround since Trump came to office on Europe is breathtaking.
Because he told him, you know, I don't need NATO. You need me in NATO.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's absolutely the truth. And the Belgians are the worst, man. They control $200 billion in frozen Russian assets, which is like twice as much as we've sent to Ukraine. And they could make a huge difference.
And they're refusing to release it?
Yeah.
Have European allies redone it? Done that? Like, have they insisted they do it?
Yeah. So there's about $300 billion in frozen Russian assets out there. There's $7 billion that American controls. Someone needs to step up and start dispersing this stuff to Ukraine.
You know what they're worried about, right? They just said the sanctity of the international system. That's what they worry about.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, if, you know, China's invested here and in this bank, could it be frozen if you don't like what they do with Taiwan? The answer is yes. But yeah. Then they'll say, if that's a chance of happening, I'm not putting my money there. That gets the bankers upset.
Yeah. And that's the case, is that, you know, Europe has shown over and over again that they're more interested in their money than they are in global stability.
Because they haven't had to worry about it.
Yeah.
They didn't think the threat was real.
Yeah.
I do get the sense, but you're there, that they do know the threat is real.
You know, here's the way Europe divides, is that you've got the Baltic states, the Scandinavian states, and the Dutch and a few others there. They understand if you lived under Russian occupation or in the Soviet era, you don't want it back and you're willing to do anything. The Baltic states and Poland all spend more on defense as a percentage of GDP than we do. And so they're great partners. Now, France, Belgium, Spain, you know, they're on the beach sipping cocktails in the Riviera.
Spain,
right?
Especially.
Yeah.
Spain is a joke.
Yeah, it is ridiculous. Everyone else at least made up a story of why they'd meet 5% of their GDP in spending for NATO when Trump demanded it. And Spain just said, no, we're not interested at all.
Yeah, that's it. We're not going to do it.
Yeah.
Right? But they're allowed to stay in the alliance. Good luck.
Yeah.
Stephen Moore, thanks so much. How do we get your videos? You cut a deal with Angel Studios?
Yeah, so Angel Studios now is taking our content. And there was a church yesterday that was bombed, narrowly missed being bombed. They were opening their studio, their sanctuary of 4,000 people. This was their opening day. The Russians tried to stop it. 4,000 people showed up to worship anyway. And so you can look at this content under A Faith Under Siege on Angel Studios. Angel Studios has picked us up. It's A Faith Under Siege. Check it out. The first episode's free.
Stephen Moore, thanks so much. Back in a moment.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Dana Perino. This week on Perino on Politics, I am joined by Executive Vice President at Targeted Victory, Matt Gorman.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
Or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
I really have been very grateful the way the president has continued to back Israel throughout all of this thing. Regardless, now I follow Israel through this. And I would like to remind everybody, if they were pushed into a ceasefire a year ago, and the beepers and Sinwar and eliminating all of, you know, Hezbollah, and Iran now, too. Think of where they could be, what they've accomplished. And now it's end game. And this war does have to end.
It is the end game. And he put it perfectly. If all the pressure on him to them to slow down, enough with Gaza and these idiots at Columbia University protesting, and we got to bring down the temperature and all these other Ivy League schools and the protests in the streets in New York City on the day after the attacks, because in anticipation of Israel attacking, they were told, you know, just back off and give up the first, I don't know, 100 miles of your country, 200 miles of your country, because it was within rocket range of Hezbollah. Now they were able to bring people back. Why? Because of the brilliant beeper, the beeper cell phone operation that they had, the follow-up. And then they flat out took out Nasrallah and all of his minions. And now Lebanon has a chance at freedom. We know what happened with Iran. No need to go over that. That nuclear program as of now is not a threat. Major sanctions are coming back on from Europe. So their suffering should grow exponentially economically. And then we have them hitting the Houthi rebels, doing tremendous damage because they were been rocketing them. And now it's time to finish off Hamas. This is the end game, 100%. Nicholas, you're in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Hey, Nicholas.
Hey, Brian, thanks for taking my call, brother. Listen, we got a big problem in schools. You know, it's all liberal women. They're all rough looking. You ever see some of these women? They exude flaccidity. They took away all the men. We got to get conservative women back in there who tend to be not only right-minded, but they're beautiful. The men will come in who tend to be more conservative. And we got to teach our kids right. We got to drive these women out of there. They're nothing but trouble. No offense, but what good are they doing?
Nicholas, women are fine as teachers. My daughter's a teacher, happens to be a woman. And there's a lot of great teachers out there. Just be very aware of what your school's in. It's a case-by-case, what district you're in, case-by-case basis. Let the teachers know that you're a hands-on parent and that you're very concerned if there is something concerned about the curriculum when it comes to history, social studies, or English. Some of those things where that pops up. Let's say they're one of these classes where we open up the newspaper or you go online and open up two or three stories and you do one of those things. What stories are they talking about? As soon as they know you're a zoned-in parent, they will respond positively. I think it's a good thing. But to go blanketly, thanks to the call, I guess, and say women aren't attractive and they're teaching kids then unconservative thoughts in school, I'm pretty sure that's an overgeneralization. Today, the president greets Benjamin Netanyahu. He did it already. They're meeting already. It's taking place. They've been meeting for 55 minutes. They'll participate in a bilateral bilateral press conference shortly. Also, the president will have a bilateral with Netanyahu. They're only going to have lunch, and then he's going to meet with his leadership in the Oval Office. The good news is, according to Caroline Leavitt, I asked her off camera today, I think good news, and normally I'm all pro-press conference. I just don't want all four of these guys to meet, five of these guys to meet today. The last thing I want to see is Speaker Johnson sitting with the J.D. Vance, President Trump, Senator Thune, along with Hakeem Jeffries and Senator Schumer. They would use that opportunity to speak up and sound off and look tough. And that's the last thing we want. The Pelosi-Schumer thing, the showdown where Mike Pence sits there awkward and we watch them go back and forth as Trump goes a 2-on-1. I don't want that. We've already seen that. And if they're going to act tough when nothing, and I don't expect anything to get done today, but after this meeting, you're going to say the president doesn't want to do a deal and it's all his fault. If they're going to have it right in front of the Oval Office. I could picture it right now. But don't do it exchanging verbal blows in front of each other. That's just what I think. So thanks, special thanks to everybody who came out in Richmond, Virginia yesterday. And it was great to get the local anchors out there, the hosts out there with me. Jeff Katz and Rich Herrera. And it was also great to meet all of you in person. Next stop is Pottstown, Pennsylvania, coming up on November 1st. And that'll round out the year for History, Liberty, and Laughs streamed on Fox Nation. Go to BrianKilmeade.com for tickets.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.